ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 205 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a MegaCon Fan Day special, as one interview was set up during the convention, which was the first ever, and another took place during the convention. First up is James Hake, the creator of a wonderful independent comic that I really like called Solar Flare. It is a book about science and people surviving a natural disaster. We talk about how he made the book happen and what kinds of things we can expect from him in the future. Then everything wraps up with an interview with Marvel's Tim Townsend, who's working on Doctor Strange. We discuss what he's doing on the book and some things we might expect there too. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, James Hake, creator of a wonderful book called Solar Flare. I met you, James, at this recent MegaCon Fan Days. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good, good. You had a booth there, which was really great. And I always like when people do those kinds of things because it gives me a chance to discover what I consider to be great books. And I really like Solar Flare.
Oh, thanks.
Excellent, excellent story. It's what I call Walking Dead with science. Because I think Walking Dead has a lot of fantasy, unfortunately. It's pseudoscience, but it's not really science. But you have actual science in it. Is that coming from like a science background that you have?
Actually, no. My background is in finance, but I'm a huge, huge fan of the post-apocalyptic genre and anything really, you know, in science fiction in general. But there's only so much in my belief. Like, the stories that I like the best are the ones that, you know, there's only so much suspension of disbelief that you can have. So I wanted to try to make it my story as real as possible. And to me, the fiction stories that are, to me, the most interesting are the ones that could happen based on just science, really, in general. Like, I've always just been a fan of that. And I've done a lot of research before I started to write the comic. And I just really wanted to make it as realistic as possible. That was kind of my big goal.
Now, of course, it's called Solar Flare for a reason. Do you want to talk about what that reason is?
Well, basically, the concept of the book is a giant solar flare hits, wipes out all electronic devices. Again, it is based on true science. It's something that happened before. One of the most popular solar flare events was called the Carrington Event, and that was in 1859. And it wiped out all electricity, left a green aura in the sky, like the Northern Lights, for over 190 days. And again, it's like a giant EMP. So I did research. There's all types of like prep guides. And I mean, if you go over, I believe it's spaceweather.com, which is something that's run by NASA and NOAA, N-O-A-A. There's like this whole community of people that follow that and really think that a flare is going to happen. And one of the most interesting things it's revealed in the book, too, is that solar flares are very similar to hurricanes. Us being from Florida, we're very well familiar with mm-hmm. the power of hurricanes. So hurricanes have a category system, you know, one being the weakest, five being the strongest. Solar flares do as well. Instead of, you know, they don't do it on a numeric scale, they do it on an alpha scale. And X is the most powerful. And then what they do after X, it goes like X1, X2, et cetera. And it's always 100 times higher or more powerful than the previous X. Mm. So the Carrington event was an X. Again, they didn't have the... And again, the Carrington event, I wanted to clarify that too, was named after the scientist who pretty much made that discovery. Mm-hmm. But there's so many fascinating things. I'm sorry to go off on a tangent, but that's, I mean, it just... It excites me just talking about it.
Well, I think it's really great because I used to love to learn science from comics. Mm-hmm. I used to read way back, and I'm that old, I used to read Justice League when Gardner Fox was writing it.
Oh, nice.
And he would teach us science as he was going through the book. He would say, this is going to happen and that's going to happen, you know, and the different elements that were involved. You know, mm-hmm. And I learned so much science from comics back in those days that I'm surprised we don't do more of that. We're much more interested in family relationships and things mm-hmm. like that. But I liked, you know, I learned a lot of science reading the book. And another thing you did too at the convention I really liked, you handed out a free solar flare preparation guide. And it says on the bottom, this information could save your life. And it's written by one of the characters in the book, interestingly enough. I really like that, which, of course, you did.
Oh, but, thanks.
You know, it was very, very well done. And I like the fact that you provide, there's in here, there's a preparation kit and myths versus facts about solar flares and EMPs and things like that. And I always saw a lot of people carrying it around the convention. So I think you did a wise thing by making this little handout. And it's also got a couple pages from issue number 2 in it. Where did the idea come from? That when in doing the research, did you decide to do this kind of a thing?
Well, one of the things I knew going forward after the book got launched on Kickstarter and we started having some great success with it, that I wanted to start doing the comic conventions. I mean, that's really how you get yourself discovered and how you get your book out there. It's the best grassroots way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So I started doing my research there on what's the best way to bring people over to your table. Because a lot of the things that I've heard is that a lot of people who do cons expect customers to come to them. Mm-hmm. And my background is in sales, so I wanted to find a hook. Mm-hmm. So one of the things was that I read in the research of you know, startups trying to get noticed was giving something away for free. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things I saw, like buttons and patches and posters. And what I thought was, you know what? What if I gave a preview? It just kind of manifested in its own, a preview of my book to hook them, on the concept. Because I really believe that the concept in itself is very interesting and it's a hook. And hopefully that'll get them in, and hopefully my writing capabilities and Branko's art will keep them there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just kind of manifested there. And then, you know, again, being from Florida during May through November, especially in early May, they come out with a new hurricane preparation guide. So I was like, wouldn't that be cool if I just had something and that took a lot of these actual facts on if that's something like a solar flare actually happened, mm-hmm. where, I mean, I again, wanted to base it realistic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just kind of took certain facts and certain ideas and I just put them in there. And the whole plan is to have, because most preparation guides have like volume 1, 2, like any textbook, or they have editions to it. They, you know, the first edition and then the second edition will add pages. Mm-hmm. So once I go through my initial print run, I want to come out with another one, maybe add a page or two mm-hmm. of different examples or something. So that was just the idea. And it's been, I have to say, probably my best idea I've ever had, especially when it comes to this comic, mm-hmm. because it really has brought a lot of eyeballs to us, and I think it's fantastic, and it's really cost-effective, too. I found a great printer, and yeah, knock on wood, it's going to get us noticed, and hopefully, I know we're publishing on our own, but the ultimate goal is to be published by a major publisher, mm-hmm. just to get our, you know, more eyeballs on us.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. Now, before people think this is a science book completely, mm-hmm. the interesting thing about Sofa that I really liked is that it has a focus on like 8 characters is what I understand.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, the main character, whose name is Jake Clifford, he's a stockbroker. And of course, you own a financial organization.
Yes.
So is this person based on you by any chance?
Yeah, he's loosely based on me. And some of the other characters are loosely based on people that I've known, or like a combination of people. So that was one thing that I read in the past was passion projects, like the best thing to do. Like I just went to a panel this past weekend at the comic convention by Jimmy, Amanda, and Tim, who are local art, huge, work with DC, et cetera. But they said one of the most successful writers are people who include themselves, write about themselves. Mm-hmm. So I started it out based on myself, but trust me, it goes way off. As it goes on, the character becomes something completely different.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really good because it starts out in the very first issue, we get to learn about the characters a lot. And then we get to the end of the book and things start to really take off as far as a solar flare. And mm-hmm. it gives us a basis on which the other books go. And of course, it drew me right in. Did you plan it that way when you put that book together? Did you want it to go that way, to start off that way?
Oh, absolutely. There's eight main characters in the story that's going to go on this journey. And the whole idea was that first issue is Jake's kind of like origin issue where it tells what he was like the day before the flare. So how it works is after the first six issues, I plan on releasing the first paperback. Mm-hmm. And when I start up the next arc, mm-hmm. I'm going to start with another one of the characters, Brent, who's Jake's best friend in the story. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do an origin story on him, what he was doing the day before. And I plan on doing that for all of the eight main characters. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason why I want to do that is I just want to show the contrast of how the character was to what they become in this new world where electricity just isn't there. So yeah, the whole plan from the get-go. And, you know, I was going back and forth with the story. I originally wanted to do a mini series at the beginning, do eight issues, mm-hmm. which it was going to be just the origin story for each of these eight characters and then start Solar Flare ongoing. Mm-hmm. But after a while, I decided, you know, it's much better to have the audience get attached to these characters before I give them the origin. So that's kind of the plan going forward.
Now, the eight characters, of course, you see images of them on your website, which is great. And I love that video on there on the About page that it talks about a lot of the things that I didn't realize was in the background. When I got to read the comic, I loved the book, and I realized there was a lot more involved. But when I got to listen to the video on the website, boy, was there a lot more involved than even I realized after reading the first three issues. So I encourage people, go and watch that video because you'll learn a lot about the basis on which the comic is founded. And it was great stuff.
Solar Flare is an ongoing comic series about a group of people brought together after the world's worst solar flare disaster, which leaves everyone with little to no electronics, similar to an electric magnetic pulse. This series is written by James Hake, with art by Bronco Jovanovic and colors by Song Yi. The solar flare disaster acts as a backdrop for a story where the primary goal is for the group of eight main characters to travel safely in a world with no functioning modern transportation from Florida to Tennessee to deliver valuable information to the government that will save millions of lives. This info will help prevent superstorms from occurring now that the Earth's magnetic field has been disrupted, and also give the government a chance to repair some of the broken electronics. The story highlights their difficult journey through a now chaotic analog world. One of the main characters, Dr. Jerry Willman, has created a chemical compound that can dissolve a hurricane-like storm when released. He has worked closely with both NASA and the National Weather Service in the past, and his work will be vital in getting things back to normal. Another main character, Tariq Abadi, is a former student of Dr. Willman that has developed a way to fix most fried electronics that were exposed to an EMP. Dr. Willman, who was visiting Florida on business before the solar flare occurred, convinces his childhood friend Jake Clifford, the main protagonist of the story, to travel with him and his assistant to a Navy base in Tennessee. Jake is also planning on reuniting with his 5-year-old daughter, who was vacationing in a neighboring state after dropping Dr. Willman, his assistant, and Tariq off in Tennessee. Jake recruits a few friends to help out and come with them on their journey. The main antagonist in this story is a Florida senator, Carl Bowman, who represents a militia-type group trying to prevent the info from getting into the hands of the old government. The senator wants things to remain chaotic so that his group can take over and run things. He finds out about the main characters and their plans through Jake Clifford's disgruntled, militia-obsessed uncle, who was not invited to come along at the beginning of their journey. This ongoing series will be separated into story arcs, all named after cities that they are either in or to which they are traveling. The first arc will be called Fort Myers, the second Sarasota, the third Winter Park, etc. Each cover of the series will be a painted solar flare design, similar to Dave McKean's unique covers on Sandman. Throughout the series, origin issues for each of the eight main characters of the group will be sprinkled in. These origin issues will follow them from morning till night the day before the solar flare disaster happened. Many events occur throughout their journey that not only dramatically change their lives, but the lives of millions of people as well.
Now, as far as the individual characters, of course, the Solar Flare Preparation Guide.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by one of the characters, of course, Dr. Jerry Woolman. And I love the information that you provided in there.
About 4 or 5 years ago, some Sunday afternoon, sitting down watching, always been a big history and science buff. And on the Science Channel, they had just a story on solar flares. And it kind of freaked me out, to tell you the truth, about how realistic and probable something like that would happen. So the whole idea began with me just thinking, like, what if that happened right now, or a solar flare, an X-class solar flare hit and wiped out all electricity? What would I do? And at the time, my daughter was actually vacationing in North Carolina. So that's really where the story just blossomed from there. I did a lot of research. You know, this is my first comic book and I wanted to do it right. So I just researched on how to write. I've been a comic fan all my life, so I've read so many comics, and I just felt honestly like I could do, I don't know if I could make a great story, but I know just from reading books all my life, I just had a feeling I at least have a semi-decent one inside of me. So that's kind of where the whole story started. I read this very famous quote, and what was it? It was a Russian guy who said, basically, if you spend more than 10,000 hours doing something, you're an expert. And I'm not sure if I've spent 10,000 hours reading comic books, but man, it sure feels like I've been close. So I'm not saying I'm an expert, but that really hit me close. So I was just like, I've read enough of them that I'm sure I can write, and especially if I do it properly, as in train, I think I could do it. So that's really how the whole idea and how me becoming a comic writer began.
See, I found that really hard to believe, because I thought you must have done other books before, because this book really hangs together so well. That, you know, I was drawn right in. I was reading it.
Thank you.
And I read the first one, and I was so glad I had issues number 2 and 3 with me, because the moment I got done with one, I wanted into 2, and I went straight into 2 and read that and got into 3. And when 3 was done, I was like, man, issue 4, where is it? So where is it coming? So the Kickstarter that you're doing is really a great thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I just done research, and out of all the crowdfunding sites, Kickstarter was rated the highest. So back in February of this year, I decided to raise money on number one. And lucky enough, we've been able to do it 3 separate times. And we just launched number 4 a couple days ago. Traditionally, I did it for 30 days. And that's what it's recommended, is to do a 30-day Kickstarter. But you can do it for as many days as you want. I did this one a little bit shorter. I believe it was like 20 days, because I want to be able to get all the contributors' rewards out in time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it's only about 2 weeks left. In the Kickstarter, we're only trying to raise about $1,500, and that's for the actual printing of issue 4. Mm-hmm. In my job, by day, I'm a financial advisor. I run my own successful practice down here in Bonita Springs, mm-hmm. and I was able to finance the payments to the artists, the colorist, the letterer, the editor, et cetera. So really all this is recouping some of that cost for the actual printing of the book. Mm-hmm. So I just got notification at the convention we did over the past weekend, mm-hmm. that I will receive the first shipment on December 1st. So they'll be all set and ready to go. So if you're interested in contributing, just go to Kickstarter.com and then search for Solar Flare, 2 separate words, and we'll be on there. You can see number 4, and also they have a search mechanism where you can look at our previous campaigns as well, 1, 2, and 3. But I plan on doing this for the indefinite future until we, knock on wood, get picked up by a major publisher.
Oh, well, that'd be great. Now, how many issues do you have planned for this?
Well, with the fact that I'm doing an origin issue for each one of the main characters, and there's 8 of them, and then I plan to do about 6 issue arcs. So well over 50 is the idea, the initial idea, but it could go for longer. And I think it very well might, because the more and more I go, because I have a long way to go from Florida to Tennessee. It's quite a journey. And you mentioned the video before about I'm naming each arc after a city they're either in or going to. So, for example, this first 6 issue arc, which will be the first trade paperback, is going to be entitled Fort Myers, because that's where the whole book starts, and that's my hometown. It's kind of my little tribute to my hometown. Mm-hmm. The next arc is going to be called Port Charlotte, and Sarasota, there's going to be a Tampa, and the one that I'm really most looking forward to writing is called Zephyr Hills. Mm-hmm. Because you being a Florida resident as well as I do, is you can't go to a gas station or grocery store without seeing a Zephyr Hills bottled water. And that was one thing my research kind of led me to as well. In my financial service profession, a lot of people who think the world's going to end or that the stock market's going to crash, they want to invest in gold and silver. But from all the research I've done, the actual commodity in a post-apocalyptic type of scenario that these people think might happen, the currency isn't gold or silver, but it's actually commodities like non-perishable goods and water. Mm-hmm. So Zephyr Hills is a big arc that I plan that has to do with the water supply. So again, I'm very, very excited about just going forward with the project. And I've been blessed enough to be able to do it this far. And I hope we're able to tell the complete story.
Well, you mentioned Dr. Willman before, and he has a nickname in the book. Do you want to tell people what that is?
Yeah, his nickname is Figs. And that's actually a little tribute to actually my very first friend. And we used to call him that. And I'm not going to reveal why. It's going to be revealed in the story. But right now, pretty much my family and my buddy and myself are the only one who knows. But we will reveal it. Again, there's a lot of like little tributes that I do throughout the book. In issue two, there's a part where they're hiding behind a car, and that car is a 1989 Ford Taurus, which just happens to be my first car. And there's just little Easter eggs. I've always been a big fan of the Easter eggs, too, where they put little hidden meanings within, you know, video games and books and comics, etc. And so there's quite a bit of Easter eggs to be found in my series, for sure.
Which is cool. As I mentioned to you, that David Peterson, when I got a chance to interview him, I asked him, where did he come up with the characters? Were they based on King Arthur's Round Table or who? And he said, well, no, these are me and my friends. So you're following a good tradition there.
See, I didn't know that, and I'm a big fan of Mouse Guard. That's just so cool. And that's what I've heard, too. A lot of people I respect who've been in the industry for quite a while say the best writers really tell stories about themselves, or you know, they put themselves within the book, whether it's a superhero, whether it's a drama, a comedy, etc. A lot of it reflects their personal selves, and then it just kind of grows from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the interesting things I really liked about the book is that the government is the good guy, and it's also the bad guy in here. They're trying to get information to the government so the government can resolve the situation. But there's also the bad guy as part of the government. Do you want to talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, he hasn't been revealed, and he's not actually going to be revealed probably until the second or third arc. Oh. He's going to be this luminous figure, and he's a Florida senator, and he goes by the name of Carl Bowman. Mm-hmm. And I wrote him in the lights of kind of a super right-wing fanatic, and the solar flare just gives him and his militia group really the opportunity to try to take care of things. So I had mentioned earlier the main theme of the story is Jake's quest in order to find his daughter in this new electronicless world. Well, the other major, major plot line of the series is getting his buddy, Dr. Willem, and his assistant, Layla Christian, to this facility in Tennessee, which is basically going to act as ground zero in rebuilding the electrical infrastructure of the United States. So Senator Bowman's going to find this out, and it's going to be in the best interest for him and his militia group to make sure that this does not happen. So that's going to be a major, major conflict that is going to be throughout the book. And I'm really excited for a lot of the things that I have planned for. Hopefully they'll come out as good as they sound and feel in my head out on paper. And again, I can't tell you how blessed I am to find such a great creative team with Branko, Song, Michael, and DJ. It just... great team we have here.
Now, why don't you talk a little bit about them? Because you've got a very international group there. How did you guys get together, and you know, who are these people?
Well, initially, when I got the idea to write, I wanted to be as prepared as possible. So I asked a lot of questions, and my sister has been in publishing for many, many years, and it just so happened she almost stumbled upon a job at Amazon. She's worked at Amazon for a long time, but they purchased and started a new company called Jet City Comics, and she's one of the heads of it. And I got to meet, when I went out to visit her, one of the editors, Alex, and I just asked his advice on how to break in and what's the best way of finding an artist. And he told me, well, you want to have at least, I'd say, 4 to 5 scripts in the can before you start soliciting to any kind of artist or publisher, and to check some of these art forums. And the one that he said, and a lot of other people that I respect had told me about, and it seemed like it was the constant site, was deviantart.com. Mm. So what I ended up doing after I had the 5 scripts written, I decided to go ahead and post an ad, and I was overwhelmed by the response. So from there, I narrowed it down to about 3 different artists. And then basically it was the toughest choice trying to decide whether to go with Bronco or Song. And I ended up going with Bronco, and he only did inks and pencils, while Song actually did the colors himself. So I ended up hiring both of them. And then probably one of the best things I ever did was my initial letter was Michael, and then he became my editor. And to me, that was one of the smartest moves I ever made. And I would recommend that to all new comic writers and even existing comic writers. It's so worth paying an editor to have some non-biased eyeballs on your stuff. Mm-hmm. Just it has made me a better writer. I've learned so much. And yeah, we are just a big melting pot full of people. And as of issue 3, I got DJ Bennett, who just happens to be the letter of Batman and was up for a Harvey Award this year for Activist.
Wow.
So things are looking great, and he is just superb and professional, and I highly recommend him and his studio, which is Ann World Designs. But apparently I've been blessed too, because a lot of people have a hard time just working together, meeting deadlines, and that's one thing I can proudly say is that we could release this book. We're doing it more on a bi-monthly schedule, but we could do it on a monthly schedule. We tested that between 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And 2 and 3, actually, and we were able to do it. So it's exciting going forward. So if a publisher does hear this or does eventually get interested in us, which, knock on wood, it seems like it's starting to happen, that just to let you, we'll be able to hit that monthly schedule.
Great. Now, where's Bronco from?
He's from Serbia. Song's from China. And like I said earlier, Michael's from Canada. So we've never met face to face. Everything's been done through email. And I have to say, like, we wouldn't have been able to do this even 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely incredible how technology has made things so incredibly easy to create this book from people across the world. It's really mind-blowing, to tell you the truth.
I was just hoping EMP doesn't come anytime soon. So.
Yeah, then we're done. Absolutely.
That would be a good thing. So there's so much going on in the story, and I really like that. And the fact that you've got like 50 issues that you can possibly do, there are so many great things going on in the book that I really like it, and I'm really excited about the things that you guys are doing moving forward. Now, issue 4, you said that's pretty much printed. As far as issue 5, do you guys have any plans as to when that's going to happen? You're saying about a monthly to bi-monthly basis.
Yeah, issue 5, the script's run, it's been edited, it's done. Branko, I just got page 17 in yesterday. Mm-hmm. So we have 1 through 17. Song's in the middle of coloring. I think he's got 5 pages done. Mm-hmm. So we're almost done there too. I'd say probably by the middle of next month.
Wow.
Awesome. It's going to be ready hopefully for a January release.
Now, if somebody wants to get the comics, they go through your website?
Yeah, right now, Comicology just accepted. You can purchase one there, but you can also purchase in physical or digital of all our books at our website, which is solarflarecomic.com. Or you can also find us on Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/solarflarecomic. And we have special deals and stuff. And of course, there's reward bundles with all issues within that Kickstarter that's still going on. I believe that ends in 19 days. Mm-hmm. So, and again, you can go there at kickstarter.com and just type in Solar Flare.
Yeah, that's December 13th, Sunday at 8 o'clock in the evening. That's when that concludes. I encourage people to go ahead and support that, because a great independent comic is a wonderful thing to find. And that's why when I came across this at MegaCon Fan Days, I was really happy to read it and to support it. And I've already supported it out there. So I really think that people should get out there and do that. Are there other projects you're working on? Because I can't imagine this is the only one that you have in mind.
Yeah, I've had a professional wrestling story kind of planned as well. And, you know, I have a few other ideas that are floating around. But like comic books, I'm embarrassed to say, but I'm a professional wrestling fan. And what I wanted to do, what's always intrigued me, is not necessarily what's on TV, but what's going on behind the scenes. And again, I think I can write a pretty fascinating story involving the behind the scenes works taking place in this fictitious wrestling world. Because a lot of times what goes on behind the scenes is much more interesting than when it actually plays out on TV. Mm-hmm. So that's something in mind. But one of the things I'm kind of scouting at these conventions that I'm going to locally, because I would like to work with somebody within the state of Florida just so we can do conventions together and just to help promote. And I'm not sure when that will happen, but that's definitely something that I want to do maybe next year.
Now, speaking of conventions, you were telling me that you're going to be at Miami in January, right?
Yeah, the Magic City Con. And then I'm hoping to do Emerald City Con in Seattle. And I believe that's the end of March.
Wow, that's a trip.
Yeah, well, luckily enough, I have a sister and brother-in-law who live out there, so free place to stay, and I'd love to get out. I heard it's one of the best conventions in the country, so I'm probably going to end up going out there anyways. Mm-hmm. I hope to get a table, but they don't really open. It's tough to get an Artist Alley table. There's no open submissions. I think you have to just know someone, so hopefully my sister, that's where my sister being in the comic industry out in Seattle, Washington. Hopefully she can pull some strings and get me on board.
Very cool, very cool. If I can recommend one, I think New York is great. I don't know what it's like to get a table there. We ended up sharing a table, my roommate and I, with the Stabity Bunny up there in October.
Oh, that's great. That would probably do with New York. I'm hoping to get into that. I just started doing conventions this year. I wanted to have some product to sell, number one. And from what I understand and what I've seen firsthand, that is the best way to just network within the industry and also to just get your book out there. It's just to do these conventions. And you know what? It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing it. I have a sales background. I like talking to people. I mean, part of my job, my daily job as a financial advisor, is getting people to trust me with their money, with all of their money, which is not an easy thing to do. And when I actually have a physical product that I can sell that I'm passionate about, to me, it's just a much easier thing than what I actually do for a living. And it's really fun. I'm really excited that to be even this far into the industry.
So what other conventions are you planning to go besides that? Are these the only two you've got coming up?
That I have on the tap, like, that I'm definitely going to. I'm going to try to do it maybe 10 to 12 a year.
Okay, wow.
So I got Magic City. I got Emerald City. I plan on doing MegaCon next year, Tampa Bay Comic Convention. I think Wizard World Orlando is on the books. Part of my financial service business, I used to have an office in North Carolina. Mm. It's called Shelby, which is right between Asheville and Charlotte. Mm-hmm. So Heroes Con, the comic store I used to buy my comics from when I lived up there. Mm. Heroes aren't hard to find. They actually run a Heroes convention. It's one of the biggest in the Northeast.
I went there this year.
Oh, did you? Yeah, I didn't get a chance to make it, unfortunately. But yeah, I want to do that one for sure, too, because again, cool. I can do a whole business trip around it. So I definitely have some good ones in store. So
because that's how I got to meet you and got to read your book was to go.
Exactly.
So I encourage people, if you go to a con, look for James and his table there with Sulfur. And you have a nice display, too.
Which oh, thank you.
And alternate covers, too, which is variant covers are all the rage these days. And you got some
really
nice
ones. They are. Like, and that's a thing where I'm kind of torn, too. I love what we're doing, but I think variant covers, they are the rage, but I also think they're not a good thing. I think that it's overkill. It kind of reminds me of the late 90s with the chromium covers and the poly bags and this fad that hopefully is going to end soon. So unfortunately, again, I like our variant covers. Oh, that's one thing I did want to tell you about. So one of my favorite comics growing up was Sandman. So one of my favorite artists of all time is Dave McKeon, who did all the cover art for all the Sandman books, but he never did any of the interior art. So what my idea was for the regular series of Solar Flare was for the regular covers to be these painted images from outer space, different viewpoints, different artists' interpretations of a solar flare occurring. And what I did there is each cover artist is a new artist that I find on DeviantArt and give them a little bit of publicity. Mm. And then the variant cover is actually either Song or Branko doing the art. So it's kind of my way of helping struggling artists have a nice thing for their portfolio, but to say that they did a comic cover.
Good.
And it's also my little homage to Dave McKeon.
Very good. Well, I highly recommend Solar Flare. It's a terrific book. I would get out there and support it on Kickstarter. I would get the issues because, boy, once you get the first one, you're going to be hooked and you're going to want to read the rest like I was. So you're doing great work, James, you and your team.
Thanks.
So keep it up. It's wonderful stuff.
Again, thank you so much. Love the podcast. It's awesome. And again, anytime you want me back, just let me know.
Well, we'll talk again sometime in the future, I'm sure. Maybe when the trade comes out.
Yeah, sounds great.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I'm talking right now with Tim Townsend, who is working on Doctor Strange, among other good things. How are you doing today, Tim?
Excellent. How are you?
Very good, very good. Why don't you talk about Doctor Strange and your involvement with it? This is the perfect time, of course, to do Doctor Strange with the movie coming. So how did you get involved with it? What is it you're doing with the book?
Well, it kind of landed in our lap, mine and Chris Pachalo's, and we had the opportunity to jump over from the X-Men to do this. And right from the jump off, I was like all for it. Chris was kind of a little unsure, but I mean, with Jason Aaron writing, he's both of our favorite writer, and I've always felt that Doctor Strange was the perfect character for Chris and I to work on it, because stylistically it just lends itself to our strengths, that like kind of otherworldly, organic style that we both gravitate towards. I mean, it's perfect for that book. Personally, he's been a favorite character of mine since I was a little kid, and I know Chris has always loved him. It was a no-brainer. I mean, it was just a no-brainer. I think it's the perfect book for us. I can't think of a better book that's custom-tailored just for us.
Now, when the movie's coming out, are you guys going to be coordinating like with the movie people, or is it going to be, you know, the book will be separate?
That generally doesn't happen. It's going to be more of an origin movie from what I understand. And so that's more of a generalization. I don't know. I think if they were to start mining our book for ideas, it would be for the second movie or something down the road. But right now, they just have to introduce the fans to the character, because even though he's one of the mainstream original Marvel, big Marvel characters, he's still one of the lesser known. There's still a lot of people who don't even know who he is.
Do you have any like input on the story, or do you just get the script and then you take it from there?
We just get the script. I know Chris deals with Jason. I mean, I don't deal with Jason hardly at all. Chris deals with Jason, and then he'll talk to me, and sometimes Chris and I will throw ideas back and forth, and maybe some of that gets back to Jason, but whatever involvement I have story-wise is very indirect.
And as far as like his appearance, I jokingly mentioned to you yesterday about the blue mask that he used to wear with the blue gloves and stuff, and you said that wasn't going to happen.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that was kind of when they were trying to make him into a superhero.
Yes,
a while
that was
back.
A failed experiment.
But as far as like expectations of the book, are there things that you want to see happen? Are there artistically things you want to do in the book?
Well, this is part of the whole Marvel relaunch, for lack of a better term. So he is not the same Doctor Strange from the 60s. I think as far as a lot of the characters that are sort of being reimagined here goes, he is probably going to remain one of the more true to his original form. Chris and I pushed really hard for a few things. He's going to be a little more Tony Stark-ish versus the quiet guy brooding in the corner, and he's going to be a little more Indiana Jones-y. He's not going to rely on that all-purpose magical spell to save the day at the end of every story. Every time he uses his powers, there's a price to pay. So there's accountability in the storytelling. There's going to be conflict. Yeah, yeah.
On the cover, I notice he's got an axe. Why is he carrying an axe? Is that something we can know?
It's more of a whatever he happens to need in the moment. So I think, was it Jason who says sometimes you need a scalpel, sometimes you need an axe? So one time it might be a bow and arrow, maybe another time it's an axe. It's whatever he happens to need at the moment.
So are you doing covers as well as interiors?
Yes.
Okay, great. When you're doing a cover, especially for a case like this, is kind of magical. Are there inspirations that you draw from, or how did you come up with the cover ideas?
Well, Chris comes up the layouts, and I'm more concerned just with the aesthetics since I'm inking Chris, so I'm just ripping off of whatever he's throwing down.
So you guys don't coordinate that, or does he give you stuff? How do you do that?
We haven't on Doctor Strange yet, but I mean, we have in the past occasionally. Like he might send me a couple breakdowns, like, hey, what do you think? What do you like? And I like this because of this, or I like that because of that. But I'm not sending him sketches or anything like that to go from. That's his. That's why he gets the big bucks.
Now, he used to be in the Illuminati, as I remember. Is that all going to kind of fade away?
I I don't know. I'm going to assume, since this is all part of the big Marvel, I'm reluctant to say relaunch because I don't know if that's how they're terming this. I don't want to tick off anybody at the office by using the wrong term, but I'm just going to use relaunch as a placeholder. But since it is part of the whole, you know, Marvel relaunch thing, I'm going to assume that they're starting from scratch to a certain point.
Is he still based in New York?
Yeah, he's still got his mansion. He's still got his digs. Yeah.
How about Clea? Is she around?
You know, I don't. That was one of the first questions I asked. And as of right now, from what I have heard, there are no plans for her. She hasn't come up yet. So as of this moment, I don't believe so. That's not to say she's not going to pop up at some future point, but...
Because she had her own fans as well.
I was bummed out. I was bummed out, man. I love Clea. And I know Chris, I think Chris is bummed out too. Chris and I are both huge Michael Golden fans. That classic Michael Golden, Doctor Strange, with those beautiful shots of him with Clea just draped over him. And it just, a lot of nostalgia there.
You've done a lot of covers and other projects like that. Are there other projects you're doing besides Doctor Strange these days?
No, right now we're just focusing solely on Doctor Strange. It's keeping us busy.
Are you planning to go see the movie?
Oh, absolutely. I'm hoping to go to the red carpet premiere.
That would be great. That would be great. Well, good talking with you and much success with it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.